What's up, apes? The commercial real estate market is not falling apart, and a ton of people seem to be a little bit upset about it. Meanwhile, the Federal Reserve is racking up losses like there's no tomorrow, and absolutely nobody is upset about it. So we'll be talking about all of that and more. Of course, we got a lot of stock moves of the day, some meme stuff to talk about as well. So definitely stay tuned for our thoughts on that and much more going on here. Guys, it is officially the final trading day of the first quarter here. So WSU Alpha portfolio ended up the first quarter up about 9.91%. We are still underperforming the indexes for Dow. Like we said, guys, we got to give them a bit of a head start. You know, the indexes, they tend to struggle a little bit. We don't want to embarrass them too much this early. So we're up 9.91%. The NASDAQ is up about 10.49%, whereas the S&P 500 is completely dominating, up a very nice 10.69%. So obviously love to see that. You know, it was kind of close to a rocky year, but it seems like J-PAL's dovish bent towards the end of December of last year has kind of lifted markets and carried through a Santa Claus rally into a Valentine's Day rally, St. Paddy's Day rally, whatever the fuck else we want to call it. Of course, welcome to the Daily Peel's video stream for the day, guys. It is currently 7:26 p.m. on this beautiful Wednesday, March 27, 2024. Guys, it is a shortened trading week as well, the Good Friday holiday, for all of those who celebrate. All you good Catholics out there. That's going to be this Friday, and so markets are actually going to be closed on that date. But of course, we still have Thursday to get through, so definitely check this out to get prepared for the market's actions for today. You want to be prepared for the Tate movement, so come talk to us. Let us know exactly what your thoughts are, what you want to see more of. We got a request to analyze Palantir stock a couple of days ago and just dropped that video here earlier today, so go ahead and check that out on the channel as well. We kind of gave the full rundown there, so I'm not going to give any spoilers right now, but of course, go disagree with me. Tell me how wrong I am and how ugly and stupid I am as well. I love to hear that stuff. All right, enough of that nonsense. Let's go ahead and get into the big stories of the day. But before we do, some banana bits for you guys. So, actually, today is kind of a holiday, or maybe it's going to be a future holiday in financial services space, and certainly in the digital asset space, as scumbag fraud, aka Sam Bankman-Fried, is officially getting sentenced on Thursday morning. Today, he's going to be told how long he's meant to rot in a prison cell. Now, this crime, Sam Bankman-Fried scandal of about $8 billion, has been described as one of the largest financial frauds in American history. So it's not necessarily up there with the likes of Bernie Madoff, who stole upwards of $50, $60 billion from, you know, elderly women and elderly grandmothers, I should say, and, you know, all these different kinds of people. Get super sad story as a side note. One of my roommates in college was actually buying a mattress freshman year. And when he was in there, kind of talking to the person buying the mattress, it was an elderly woman about 80 years old. And she basically said she was going to be working until the day she died because she lost all of her money with Bernie Madoff. So hopefully she got some money back. Just kind of a strange aside there. But either way, it shows how fucked up the shit was. Most of the people that ended up losing money with FTX were douchebags, to put it quite honestly. I mean, these are crypto heads that told you to have fun staying poor on Twitter. So the U.S. government probably doesn't feel as bad for these people as they did the mom and pops that lost with Bernie Madoff, especially considering it was a way lower dollar amount. So he's probably not going to see a lifetime sentence like the absolute goat of financial fraud Bernie Madoff did. But certainly it should be at least a decade or two based on a lot of these charges and the sentences. Stay tuned for that. We're going to have a ton of fun talking about that at the beginning of next week. Now, moving on, Amazon went big into AI on Wednesday, even bigger into AI, I should say, as well, dropping $2.75 billion into their investment in Anthropic. This is kind of like Amazon's, you know, they're trying to build up their own war chest against Microsoft and OpenAI, and the apparent emerging partnership between Apple and Google. Apple and Google, these guys have been sucking each other for quite a few decades as well, because basically, Google pays about $20 billion or so dollars to Apple to have Google Chrome be the default search engine on Safari devices. That is pure profit margin to Apple, so these two have been in love for quite a while. So expect that relationship to continue, but we're starting to see these teams form in the AI wars. All right, and then, of course, Shohei Ohtani. We've talked about Shohei a little bit here before in his $700 million contract with the MLB. This guy has made some of the dumbest financial decisions that anybody could ever possibly think of. For example, back when he was playing baseball in Japan, this man was earning a six-figure salary, and instead of buying a house and kind of like living a normal life like an actual human being, what he did was elect to have the team pay his parents, then the parents paid him $1,000 a month as like an allowance, and he told them he only wanted $1,000 a month. He then lived in like the dorms for rookies. Like, imagine choosing to live in freshman dorms as a senior in college. That's essentially what Shohei did. Now, with the $700 million contract, he also did something pretty fucking stupid. he's basically going to get like $2 million a year, which definitely, you know, can't complain about. That's more than most of us, certainly me and you, will ever see. But he deferred most of the contract until the end of the 10-year period. So he's going to be receiving like $68 million payments every July 1st from July 1st, 2034 to July 1st, 2043. So that's effectively how he's going to get paid. Inflation adjusted, it's worth about $437 million. And that's not even taking taxes out. So still a ridiculous sum that neither of us will either come close to, but we can always try our best there. Interesting story about him and his whole gambling shenanigans. As soon as I understand what the fuck is going on there, I will definitely be writing something up about it, but it's been so damn confusing so far, so definitely stay tuned for that as well. Of course, vinyl record sales top CDs in the United States once again. Not that that really matters for anything whatsoever, except all of us Gen Zers trying to be hipper and cooler than the next person, and I don't know, whatever the fuck. Apparently, making life harder is the way to become cooler. Like, don't get on Spotify or anything. Buy an 80-pound record player, call your friend with a pickup truck to come load it into your apartment so that you can listen to 3 songs instead of just playing everything from your phone, whatever the fuck you want to. Whatever, do whatever you want. Let's get into the big story of the day. Macro Monkey, we have the anti-black swan. So, you guys might be familiar with Nassim Taleb. He's a phenomenal financial writer. Great series called the Insurgent series that I could not recommend enough to anybody else out there, especially the last book, Skin in the Game. But one of his main books, and the book that kind of put him on the map, was called The Black Swan. This is where he describes an idea of market events that comes as a complete shock to everybody and have huge implications. Think of those fat tail events that nobody really sees coming but have an outsized impact on markets. We're talking about the exact opposite of that, and that is very large, kind of foreseeable trends that everybody expects. And there is no better example in markets right now than the commercial real estate industry. Since the entire world shut down in March of 2020, everybody and their mother that has a Wall Street Journal account has been saying the commercial real estate market is going to fall apart, especially offices. It's going to be fucking Armageddon for these assets. But we haven't seen that right now. And in retrospect, it kind of makes a little bit of sense once you take a deep breath, chill the fuck out, and think about it for more than 2 seconds, as no investor seems to want to do today. But effectively, when we know that these things are coming, we can adapt to them in real time. And so that's going to kind of, it's going to, you know, make it a little bit less impactful when and if that event actually comes, because we've kind of planned ahead. So commercial real estate market, let's go ahead and get into some of the specifics. We saw a 51% decline in the commercial real estate market transaction volume in 2023 compared to 2022. Obviously, that is absolutely horrendous. In addition to the transaction volume decline, we've seen price declines of about 11% in aggregate. That's a 1-2 punch harder than Jake Paul is going to receive from Mike Tyson in the coming weeks when he fights that old man for whatever reason besides money on Netflix. So really, the main reason for this has been work from home, skyrocketing interest rates that are deteriorating the principal value of these assets. So work from home, obviously nobody's going into offices, whatever. Everybody knows that side of the story. But so that's kind of the situation that we're dealing with right now. But despite the shuttering transaction volume and decline in prices, we're not seeing the default rates that many prognosticators had kind of called for at the time. We're certainly not seeing this impact regional banks just yet. It's been speculation that it's going to hurt banks like New York Community Bancorp, but they're still going strong. They were up about 4% today, I think, when I looked. So it is what it is. It really hasn't had that impact just yet. And it kind of makes a lot of sense when we start to think about it. There have been some really scary headlines about the CRE industry coming across your Bloomberg screen or whatever the fuck it is that you use to actually watch market news. And effectively what we're seeing here is that there's $1 trillion of commercial real estate loans that are coming due in 2024. 42% of commercial real estate loans are coming due in the next 3 years. So what does this really mean? I mean, if we stop to think about that for a second, we can find out that at this time last year, 2024 had about $600 billion that was due in commercial real estate loans. A lot of people were expecting those to default. But effectively what happened is that this idea of amend and extend. So borrowers and banks, the lenders, have effectively decided that instead of just defaulting on these loans, they're going to amend the terms of the loans, aka increase the interest rates on them and extend the maturity date, allowing the borrowers more time to pay off these loans. Commercial real estate loans, also typically the standard is about 7 years. And so if you have an industry that banks itself on 7-year loans, that means about 14 to 15% of total loan volume is going to come due in any given year. They're going to mature in any given year. So if we multiply that by 3, that's about 42 to 45%. So that's exactly in line with what we should be seeing. What we're seeing right now is not a return to a quote-unquote new normal. This is just normal. This, like, what wasn't normal was the post-GFC period of 2012 to 2023, when interest rates were absolutely at the floor and anybody could do whatever the fuck they want, your dumbass probably could have gone out there and bought the Empire State Building if you weren't sitting in third grade or whatever else you were doing at the time. But effectively, what this means is that borrowers and lenders are getting used to a high interest rate environment once again. This is the normal state of play in the U.S. commercial real estate industry. We just haven't seen it for quite a while. So a lot of people are getting way more worried than they actually should be. It's perfectly reasonable to expect banks and borrowers to kind of come to a consensus here, because banks don't want these assets on their balance sheet. Why would they? It costs a ton of money to transfer over onto their balance sheet in terms of overall financing costs. Then they have to maintain this asset. Otherwise, they're going to have to take, you know, even higher depreciation than they would anyway just from time passing. They do not want these things on the balance sheet, and that's why they don't want these borrowers to default. They're willing to extend and amend these loans. So, you know, this has been a big thing going on. We're also still seeing some pretty strong free cash flow growth at these REITs. Now, REITs operate off of what's called funds from operation, not necessarily free cash flow, and we're seeing strong funds from operations growth considering the circumstances. It's still well below historical levels, but, I mean, who wouldn't expect it to be, given that literally nobody goes into offices anymore? Plus, the other big factor here is incentives of local government. So local governments, they do not want these borrowers default thing. They don't want, effectively, they don't want people working from home. There's a thing called an urban doom loop, which effectively means that when a certain demographic of people leaves an office or like a central business district, is technically what they're called, a CBD, not the kind that's fun to smoke. But when these people leave central business districts, that is going to reduce the amount of business that's going into shops and other retailers around the area. That's then going to reduce tax dollars going to the city. And when you reduce the amount of people going into these shops, obviously that's going to reduce their incomes. And that's going to make more shops close, and then the cycle continues. So these local governments are heavily incentivized to do something with these empty office spaces, because Class A buildings are probably going to be fine, but it's everything else that people are worried about. So they're going to have to come to some kind of a consensus with banks and with borrowers to figure out what the hell they want to do with all these assets. We can't wait to see what it is. I just certainly hope it's not fucking WeWorks or like pickleball courts or whatever the fuck else people are into these days. All right, let's get into some of the ripe stocks for the day. Of course, Trump Media and Technology Group. We are talking about this once again. Trading under the ticker symbol DJT was up 14.2% yesterday on literally no news whatsoever. It's just the fact that, you know, dads across America, Fox News dads, as Shane Gillis would say, great comedian right there. Fox News dads across America are bidding up shares to donate to Trump's legal fund, apparently, is kind of what it effectively feels like. But either way, it's going well. Once again, up 14.2%. Now, it's not, it is absolutely not realistic at all to expect TMTG to disrupt the likes of Facebook, Netflix, everything out to AWS even. These guys want to have their own kind of front-end infrastructure, and it's completely unrealistic to expect that to actually happen. Now, if you have the confidence, all the power to you. Go ahead and sip some beer and try to deliver that. Try to get some normalcy back in your life. I mean, just try to chill and relax and ride out the pain, because there is certainly going to be a lot of it. I'll be absolutely amazed if this thing doesn't go bankrupt within the next decade, but hey, we'll see what happens, especially if Trump becomes president. Wouldn't he have to divest his interest in this company? I mean, who knows? It's a complete shit show. A lot of media outlets are out there reporting that they made $3.8 million in 2023. I clicked through every single 10K and 10Q that was available for this company. Could not find any revenues whatsoever. All they said was, we have not made any revenue yet. Now, I might be looking in the wrong place. If you guys are smarter out there, please tell me where I should be looking, but, you know, I don't know where they're getting these numbers from. All right, let's go ahead and move on into some real companies here. So we have solar stocks to talk about. We're talking about the ticker symbol TAN, exactly what, you know, most people would like to be. Unfortunately, as you guys can tell, I'm very far from that. I'm a big SPF 100 lover. And, you know, as a result, I'm kind of anti-sun, but obviously these companies are extremely pro-sun because they use that to generate energy that then generates their income. Now, over the past couple of years, you would think that the sun has exploded or something based on the way that these stocks have performed. They have been just through the floor, falling year over year, day over day, and it was all entirely due to J-PAL's interest rate hikes. Now, most solar products are purchased on credit, so when the cost of borrowing spikes so much, nobody's going to be out here getting a loan to put solar on their house and get that kind of energy. Only Greta Thunberg really cares that much to pay 10% interest on their solar panels on their roof. So nobody's been buying this stuff yet, but now that J-PAL has kind of signaled rates have likely reached their peak, it seems like interest is starting to spike back up in this category. So great day for them. The index itself was up 5.5%, but individual players like Sunrun were up much more. All right, moving on into the meme stock of the day, we have GameStop. You know, speaking of companies that are bound to go bankrupt at some point, this company was down 15% on the day. Very shitty earnings report. They missed on both the top and the bottom line. Effectively, this company's banking on its CEO's day trading strategies to stay afloat. They literally permitted the CEO, Ryan Cohen, the guy who founded Chewy and then was like kicked out of the board for whatever reason. I have no idea what's going on with this guy, but somehow he's the CEO of a major American corporation, and he has full permission from his board to use the company's cash to trade stocks. I think that's pretty much all that has to be said there. If you are buying GameStop, you are effectively buying into Ryan Cohen's day trading strategy. So just be aware of that going forward. Proceed with caution. All right, now, of course, we have DraftKings as well. Gambling and capitalism together have really reached the ultimate point of degeneracy when you can bet on betting companies. Now, there's nothing more American than this, quite honestly. So obviously, we love to see it. But the NCAA apparently doesn't love to see it. These guys hate fun. We know that they hate fun. I mean, they didn't let college players make money off of themselves for literal decades until Libby Dunn burst onto the scene or whatever the fuck caused them to make that change. But the stock was down 6.8% today because the NCAA has basically come out here and said that they are looking to ban prop betting. I know the tears are probably flowing from end to end right now, but nothing's happened just yet. They're going to have to work with state governments to do so and ban it on these apps. But with the idea being floated, investors in DraftKings got a little bit spooked and sold off their shares for the day. And for the uninitiated, by the way, a prop bet is basically just a form of degeneracy where you can bet on events in the game that don't actually kind of like link to the outcome of the game. Think about, like, if you were betting on the Boston Celtics and you were going to bet on how much Jason Tatum scored in a game or, you know, like, how many rebounds he was going to have or some shit like that. It doesn't actually impact the final score of the game, but it's just one of those things that you can actually throw money on and have a little bit of fun with. All right, finally here, guys, we're talking about the Federal Reserve, and for the first time in quite a while, we're talking about all-time lows. That is the amount of income that the Federal Reserve actually generated this year. Really, it probably should be all-time highs, because what we mean to say is the Federal Reserve has hit all-time highs in their losses. You know, there's a phenomenal Ronald Reagan quote where he says, "The 9 most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help," and we are getting a prime example of that with the Federal Reserve here today. So, the Central Bank of the United States lost an amazing $114.3 billion in 2023. No, that kind of sounds insane. How does the Federal Reserve lose money? So let's take a step back and explain for just a quick second. The Fed is one of those institutions in government that actually pays for itself most years. Obviously not last year. That was very far from the case. But they have 7 different income streams. 80% of their income generally comes from just holding interest on U.S. Treasury. So kind of a Ponzi scheme, if you ask me. But either way, they make money in a lot of different ways. And every year, they take how much money they make, they cover their operational expenses so that they can net out to zero, and the rest of that cash gets sent over to JL at the U.S. Treasury. That is not happening this year whatsoever. They booked a $114.3 billion loss for the year, and that's largely because the payments that they were making on their interest deposits. So payments on deposits or bank reserves held at the Fed, they were up 66% compared to last year at $176 billion. And then we have interest on reverse repo facility up an amazing 146%, or 148%, excuse me, year over year at $104.3 billion as well. So absolutely disgusting to see that, but it's not like it's Berkshire Hathaway or Apple coming with a bad earnings report or something. This is, you know, obviously it's a government institution. Effectively, what they do here is they take that $114.3 billion, they put that into an account on the balance sheet called a deferred asset. And this is basically just something that the Fed is going to have to pay down before it starts to pay the Treasury once again. So, you know, it was tough to see something like that. This isn't really going to affect liquidity at all whatsoever, because the money that's tied up in these losses and what should be income is something that would never see the light of day anyway. This is pure financial money. It's not the kind of thing that you would see in like a small business loan or like a home loan or anything like that. This is pure, like when in The Wolf of Wall Street, when Matthew McConaughey's character talks about the Fugazi, this is Fugazi money. So it's not like it really impacts markets all too much, but it's interesting to see that Jay Powell really shot himself in the foot right there. When is the Fed going to be able to remit on its income to the Treasury again? Can we expect similar losses in 2024? And how long can this last if they do rack up losses year after year? Guys, that about does it here for the day. Of course, we wanted to end with a quote related to our commercial real estate discussion and kind of the discovery of trends and how that impacts the actual trend itself. Who better to go to than the man himself, Benoit Mandelbrot? I'm pretty sure that's how you pronounce his name. Maybe somebody French out there can correct me. But he said, "The trend has vanished, killed by its own discovery." I absolutely love that quote, basically saying that as soon as investors kind of observe something, the opportunity to make money off of it is gone. It's kind of like the, I'm pretty sure there's some effect in science where it's like you can't observe something without changing it. Is that the Hawthorne effect? Or like when you observe something, I don't know. It has something to do with like quantum shit that's way above my pay grade. But either way, that about does it here for the day, guys. Thank you again for joining us on the podcast, on the video stream. Give us a like and subscribe so that I can keep my job as well. Always love coming on here and shooting the shit with you guys. Like I said, go ahead and check out our Palantir video. Go check out our Tesla report if you haven't already. I'm personally insulted if you haven't already done that. So go ahead and check out all that stuff and let us know what more you want to see from us here at WSO. Otherwise, happy investing, happy trading. Enjoy the last day of the first quarter of 2024, and bye now.
And thanks to you, my listeners at Wall Street Oasis. If you have any suggestions whatsoever, please don't hesitate to send them my way, Patrick at wallstreetoasis.com. Until next time.